Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
Now, sure, I'm sure you've seen the ads. AIB's The Toughest Trade is back on telly tomorrow night. It's on RTÉ 2, 9:30. And we've already spoken to Michael Murphy about his trip to Clermont Auvergne. The same series features Welsh rugby legend Shane Williams making the reverse switch from rugby to Gaelic football. And earlier this afternoon, he popped into studio. Shane Williams is here in the studio. Somebody just came up to us there in the office and said, "Is that Shane Williams?" I'm like, "Yeah, he's bigger than I thought he'd be."
Oh, yeah, I always get that. I can't be any smaller than I thought, anyway, could I?
It's usually the opposite. All actors, everybody else gets smaller. But you, it must be a pleasant surprise. People are like, "Geez, you're not that small."
Yeah, it is a pleasant surprise. I think I'm so used to being the small one now that when they say that, it's quite refreshing, to be fair.
You did the toughest trade with Glenn Swilly. Were you aware of Gaelic Games beforehand?
Well, not really. I think when AIB asked me to get involved, I think I'd obviously heard of Gaelic football and the likes of Tommy Bow and Shane Hogan that had played it before, so they've kind of spoken about it. But I knew very little about it, in fairness, and obviously when the offer came around, straight on YouTube, had a look at it and seen what the game was all about, and I just remember thinking, God, that's quite a cool game, you know. There's a bit of rugby involved in it, a bit of football, a bit of running about. I'm sure I can do that, and... Came over here and I just really enjoyed the experience, you know. We had some fun. Training was a lot more difficult than I kind of expected. You know, the pitch to start with is twice the size of a rugby field. There's still 15 guys on the field, so which to me just means you've got to run around a lot more, really, and cover twice as much distance. But in fairness, I enjoyed the experience. The lads around me were fantastic, and everyone at Glenswilly and the town itself just really looked after me. So I had a great week.
What aspect of the game did you find most difficult and what aspect was easiest?
The hardest thing was getting used to the rulings and really what I was doing on the field. Like I said, I'd watched a bit on YouTube and the
Even
lads had spoken about it.
Even we don't understand the tackle, by the way.
Well, exactly, yeah. And that was I didn't do much tackling when I was a rugby player, so I wasn't going to do much as a Gaelic footballer. But, you know, where to stand and what position I was going to play in and... You know, the fact you've got to kick the ball off the floor into your hands. I kept on picking it rugby style and kept getting told off about that. Just little things like that were difficult.
Yeah.
You know, the game itself, once you're in full flow, it's very similar to rugby. You know, you've got to find your own space. When you've got ball in hand, you've got to look for other players around you before some guy shoves a shoulder in your chops, really, which happened a few times and hit me for six and hit me by surprise. But... No, look, it's a good sport, and like I say, if it was something completely different to what I'd done, then I think I would have struggled. But as the week went on, the lads helped me, and I eventually got there in the end.
And did you sample the nightlife in Glenswilly? Did you hang out with people, meet people? Was all that going on?
Yeah, there was. I think obviously it's a close community.
Yeah.
You know, I was with the lads pretty much every day of the week, and after the game, we had a few beers. And really enjoyed the experience. You know, we went out for food, and not only the players, but the family were there, the crowd were in this pub, and we were having a few beers.
Yeah.
I snuck off at about 12 o'clock because I knew I could see by the way some of the guys were enjoying themselves that it was going to be a late one. And my phone was going at 4:30 in the morning, so I dodged a bullet there, really. Yeah. But I think the guys are still cursing me that I snuck off and...
It's frowned upon in these parts.
..the coward way out, really.
I guess it's a throwback for you to that amateur ethos, which you would have started playing rugby in, and you understand how it works.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm from a small village in South Wales. I've lived there all my life. I started playing for the club side at 8 years old. All the way through to youth, and then eventually played for the senior team. Obviously, the rest is history, really, as far as the rugby's concerned.
Yeah.
So I know that, you know, the community is very important to rugby and to a sport and to the Gaelic football. And I know that, you know, you're playing for pride and for passion rather than, you know, a paycheck at the end of the month. And I kind of respect that for these Gaelic footballers. And when I went to Donegal and saw the following the guys had, the fact that, you know, we went to the school visit and they had songs made up of about Michael Murphy and the Glenswilly team, and even chucked my name in there, which was great. Anyway, midweek shindig where everyone was dancing and singing up on the stage, and the whole community was there, and you know, I can completely respect that, and I was very humbled by it all. When you imagine then that these guys that I'm playing alongside, they're training at 6 o'clock in the morning, doing a weight session. They're going to work, and then they turn up in the evening to train or to play Gaelic football, not getting paid a penny to do it. You know, utmost respect to them.
Mm. I'm not surprised you're up for doing something like this, because I see since you've retired, the compulsion to be active, to move, has not deserted you. I saw in Morocco, there's a... 4 marathons in 4 days across 4 different disciplines of running, mountain biking, desert biking, kayaking has taken your fancy. There's been London marathons. There have been Ironmans. I read you say that when you retired, within 4 or 5 days of getting back from Japan, there were itchy feet on the couch. You were twiddling your thumbs. The wife said, get out.
Yeah, it was basically that. And I was looking forward to retirement and resting. I've been training as a professional athlete for almost 20 years. Got home on pretty much the Monday. It was okay. Tuesday, started twiddling my thumbs. I think it was the Wednesday, the wife said, right, come on, let's go shopping. And I knew then, I'm not going shopping. I'm going to get out and I'm going to go for a mile run or something.
Yeah.
And I just started from there, and I got asked to do the London Marathon, and it kind of snowballed from there, really. I'm not going to be able to play rugby again. Yeah. I'm for Wales anyway, certainly, or at a professional capacity. I'm not going to play soccer for Man U or the Swans or anything like that. And I just want to keep active. So, all right, okay, I may have gone to the extreme with these challenges and so on. Mm. But, you know, I'm managing to get through them, and there's a sense of accomplishment when I actually do it.
What is it about a day where you don't train? What's the feeling that you get?
Just frustration. The fact that I'm missing, I feel like I'm missing out.
Yeah. Feel stodgy.
Just straight away. And I'll only eat rubbish as well if I'm sat down doing nothing. And then I feel guilty about doing that and go for a run anyway. So... yeah, it's bizarre. I think, as a rugby player, every day, I wanted to train every day because I thought, if I don't train today, what about a Tommy Bow or, a Hogg or whoever I was playing against? What if he's training today and he has that little edge on me and whatnot? So I found that even on my days off, I was ending up doing something. And if I didn't, I felt really guilty about it. I thought that would all go when I stopped becoming a professional rugby player or an international rugby player anyway.
Yeah.
But it just didn't. I just felt guilty.
It turns out it's probably not about that. It's about that chemical release of endorphins and the toxins coming out in your sweat and just that headspace when you go for a run and get the music going. You mentioned there, and you can shoot me down here for the wrong pronunciation, your village, Glenamon.
That's very good, yeah.
In the Amon Valley?
Yes. You even sound Welsh.
I watched a documentary on you last night, and it really is a small town, small community, not a million miles away from Glenswilliam.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And it's not like a super wealthy place. It's a place where the people are supportive of each other. And that really seems to have defined you. And you've never strayed too far from Wales or from that sense of community. Is that fair? Is that a fair representation of where you're from and what it means to you?
Probably perfect representation, really. Look, I was born in the Amon Valley. I'd lived there all my life. I'd had opportunities in rugby and other careers, but rugby, I suppose, to go to places like Toulon, Cast, or even across the bridge to play in England. Even that was too far for me, really. I'm just very comfortable where I am. All my family live there. My wife's family and friends live there. God, I've got mates that I went to started primary school with, you know, at the age of 4, and they're still my best mates. That's the kind of person I am. Mm. And when I became a professional rugby player, everyone was so supportive. They kept my feet on the ground.
Mm.
And they made me realise that, you know, I'd like to think I'm a humble man that's worked hard for what he's got. So by staying in the Amon Valley, that's kind of helped me do that.
Mm.
Up until I retired, really, and spent 3 years in Japan where I was a fish out of water, which is not a safe place to be in Japan, I don't suppose. But I really enjoy being comfortable within my surroundings and everything. And even though I went to Japan for 3 years, loved it, completely loved the place, and, you know, had a great experience. I couldn't wait to get home.
Right.
And I suppose, you know, I'm in my valley, everyone knows me. So, you know, I can go shopping in peace. People aren't like, oh, there's Shane Williams, they're going there, let's go and have a chat with him. It's like, oh, there's Shane.
Yeah.
Oh, he's having a pint in the corner there, or, you know, he's buying milk and bread in the corner shop as he normally would do. So, I enjoyed that. It brought me down to earth. And I'm still there yet now, you know, still involved in the club I started with when I was 8 years old.
Right. You were sports mad from early on. So there was, obviously, rugby is such a huge part of Welsh life. And there's football and there's gymnastics, which you got quite good at. I presume from day one there are people giving you the cliched line that you're too small for rugby.
Yeah, I had it all. I've had it all my life, really. I was going to say all career, but all my life, I think. Yeah.
Was there a point early on where you thought, they're probably right, I am too small?
Yeah, well, I did. I played in primary school. In comprehensive school. Going from primary school to comprehensive school, I noticed straight away there was lads that were far more mature than I was. Mm. And I was quite a good little rugby player at the age of 9, 10, you know. And I went to comprehensive and I thought, oh, my God, how am I going to compete with these guys? And slowly, I was getting kind of put in the B team. Mm. Of the C team, mm. because physically I just couldn't cope with these guys. They were, you know, they were a foot taller than me. They had beards, and you know, I was waiting for that to happen to me, really. So it was tough, and I kind of went into football a little bit because it was less physical, and yeah. and obviously I've got the big lads, the mature guys, chucking me around the field. And gymnastics was my kind of getaway because yeah. Even though it was a team sport then, it was a school team sport. Individually, I was in charge of what I was doing, yeah. and I was representing myself. So. You know, the only physical thing was trying to do the backflips and the somersaults and so on. So I kind of enjoyed that. And, yeah. and
you
from
got,
a
you
young...
Got, you got good at it.
I got, you know, I represented county levels, yeah. did it for the Welsh schools and everything. And really enjoyed it. And it probably helped me develop through the years. You know, you look at these gymnasts now.
Yeah.
You know, they're big lads, they're strong lads. And that probably helped me along the way.
I've heard it said, regardless of what sport you want to go into, get your 6-7-year-old to do some gymnastics, whatever he or she goes
yeah.
into.
I would definitely recommend it. Yeah. yeah, I think so. It definitely helped me, mm. And I, you know, there were players like Garth Cooper who did it as well in school level, and he was this strong, you know, physical player who played for Wales as well. And there was others, so it is a massive part of it. And I just, you know, in school, I wasn't really worried. Oh, look, I'm not playing in the first year. I'm gutted. I'm never going to play for Wales. I just thought, oh, do you know what? Perhaps this isn't what I need to be doing. Mm. And it wasn't until I probably got to, 18, 19 years old, where I obviously matured a little bit, I was able to compete with these guys again. I'd grown a little bit, yeah. and I was thinking, oh, I remember that guy in school was keeping me out of the place. All of a sudden, I'm faster than him, and I can yes. do this. And that's when I just started taking rugby serious again, at 18, 19 years of age.
Yeah, and you were a scrum half originally, and someone said, you know what, let's try on the wing. And I've watched some of your tries from the late 90s, those Neath days, and... man, they're exciting! Like they're school's boys own stuff, running the pitch, jagging in and out. Can you try and explain to me what it's like to have that power? And by the power, I mean that speed.
Yeah.
There's just moments where you stand someone up and you know you have them. There was a try, you know, years later against Argentina where you beat the fullback. It's 1-on-1. I mean, you must have beaten him by about 4 meters, even though he was right next to you initially. And there's just these moments where your speed kicks in and. There's a moment in the crowd where you're like, oh, Williams has him.
Yeah.
What's your experience of that on the field?
That was kind of my go-to. That was my ecstasy then. You know, it was great to score tries and it was almost the same feeling.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, I'd be playing against these players and I'd be thinking, oh, my God, you know, Brian O'Driscoll's and you know, the players that, the Tuilagis even, these big lads that were coming at me and I was thinking... Okay, you're not going to run over these guys. You've got to step and you're going to use your feet. And, you know, whenever I used to step on, I remember, the times when they used to fall on their backside.
Yes.
I just used to get such a rush from that. And, you know, I don't know if Brian's going to admit to this, but I remember stepping him on the knoll before and he fell flat on his face. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, that he's one of the best players in the world. And I've just stepped him and I've just made him look silly then. And there was such euphoria afterwards that my game just changed. I just wanted to do that every time I had it.
Yeah.
Look, it didn't happen every time.
Sure.
There were times and Brian probably had his better of me over the years afterwards. But that was my adrenaline pumper. That was my excitement. And that's what I lived for when I played rugby. It was all about beating players. Getting through the gap, creating holes for others, and the tries were the bonus. So that was my go-to. I absolutely loved it.
I can imagine. And you hear the crowd react, and in your periphery, you see he's on his ass, and you keep going. And like, is a lot of it just off the cuff? You're reacting from millisecond to millisecond.
Yeah, well, everything I did was off the cuff.
It seemed that
Let's be honest.
It seemed like you'd start off in a line, and let's see where it takes me.
Yeah, I think it's such a fine line, such a split second between getting the ball and thinking, right, okay, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah.
Especially at international level, you've got to be on the ball straight away. So whenever I got the ball, I always used to think, right, something positive. Right. Run at the line and then see what happens.
Right.
And I'd look up and half the time I'd be thinking, please be a hooker, please be a front rower. So it's easier to get past you.
Yeah.
Like I say, Brian O'Driscoll or Tommy Bowe in front of you is a bit harder, but I just love it. That was my adrenaline. That's what I wanted to do. That was my job, was to take these guys on, beat them, and hopefully not get tackled and keep hold of the ball and create space for others. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to do it. I probably got better and better at it because I was every time I beat someone, I enjoyed it more.
Right.
And I wanted more. It was almost like a drug.
Drug,
and I was a bit addicted to it. And, you know, people are on about, oh, scoring tries must have been great. It was.
Mm.
But, you know, you can't score tries every game. But usually I'd beat a player or beat two players during every game. And I used to live off that.
That duel, yeah. If there's people tuning in, we're talking to Shane Williams, who you are you're the fourth most international tries in history. You've had two Grand Slams. 2008, the IRB World Player of the Year. I mean, what an amazing, surreal thing. You beat the likes of Paris, say, that year, and Dan Carter, and some big names. I watched your debut against France in 2000, courtesy of Graham Henry, where you're just over 11 stone.
Yeah.
Scary thing. You threw an intercept pass and horrible moment, all that. I mean, is that still the worst moment for you, or is that...
Worst and best, all honesty.
Yeah.
The day itself, like... I remember being selected in the squad and thinking, oh my God, I really don't think I'm ready.
Right. What age were you in 2000? You would have been 20, I'd say.
Yeah. So, I was 20. I was 22. Sorry,
let's get it right. 22.
Yeah, and yeah, look, I looked about 12, but I was 22.
You look very small.
Yes. I probably was too small. But I just remember being selected in the squad and thinking, oh my God, am I going to be able to do this? Am I going to be able to compete? You know, playing against Intermac. Manier, Ibanez, some of the best players that have played the game. And I remember on the bench thinking, I hope they don't put me on.
Really?
I was petrified, absolutely petrified. But when they put me by the side of the field there and I stepped over that line, I just felt like a different person. I just wanted to get involved in the game as early as I could. I was like a bee flying around just trying to get my hands on the ball. Eventually it did happen. And I went for that break, the step, kind of beat a defender. I thought, oh my God, this is easy.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it, and then as I was half tackled, went for the miracle ball. Then,
yes, on the halfway line.
Yeah, it was quite a way out.
Yeah,
and Emile Intermac, who was one of my favourites as well.
Mm.
I'm sure he winked at me as he ran past, caught the ball, and scored from 55 yards. And I remember thinking then, oh my God, you know, this is probably my last cap as well as my first. And but what was great was after that game, then I just remember thinking, right, okay, well, a year now. Just enjoy it, and I did. And you know, I got involved in the game. A couple of positive parts of the game went on, and you know, some good plays. And I came off the field relatively happy.
Yeah.
Not happy with the intercept pass, but the fact that I'd had my first cap and I'd given it my all and I'd expressed myself. So, yeah, in one breath, it was a bad day at the office, but I also loved it at the same time.
I can imagine. There's an amazing period in your career from that age until the World Cup in 03, which I'm very interested in. So Steve Hansen comes in as manager, and we think the All Blacks are very enlightened and they're all about skill sets and skills. And Hansen looked at Shane Williams and said, do you know what? He's a bit small, that guy. The original thought from Hansen. So there's 2 years when you're in the wilderness, and you know, you go to the World Cup in 03 as the reserve, third reserve scrum half. That's how low down the pecking order you are. And, you're not a kid anymore, so it's looking kind of bleak enough. And it's really a game against New Zealand where Hansen mixes up the team. It's almost lambs to the slaughter, like, go out there, we're not taking this game seriously. And you run riot. Like, I watched some of the footage. You just went for it.
Yeah.
And it was just by force of that game and then the following game against England where you proved to everyone and very much any future Welsh coaches that actually I should be here and I'm lethal if you give me a chance. Your memory of that period out in the cold and, you know, fighting your way back to cement your place for Wales again?
Yeah, probably a defining moment in my career, certainly. I think when I got dropped from the team and it was a bombshell, I was devastated. I'd played for Wales, I'd scored for Wales.
Mm.
I'd been at the Millennium Stadium full capacity. I wanted that again.
Mm.
I wanted to keep doing it. And then to be told that you were dropped and that you weren't big enough, you know, it was a kick in the teeth, really.
Yeah.
And at the time, God, I hated Steve Hansen. And, I felt I'd been hard done by and so on and so forth. But in hindsight of it all, it was probably what made me the player I eventually became. You know, I went away. Initially, I tried putting weight on too much. I started taking supplements and I started pushing weights in the gym. I was getting injured and it was a vicious circle. I just couldn't get back on the field. And when I got on the field, I either got injured or my form was poor.
Yeah.
And that was probably for about a season and a half. So eventually I just decided, look, you know, this is your dream job. You're a rugby player. Why are you trying to please Steve Hansen? Go away, just work on your speed. Okay, let's put a bit of weight on, but let's not take the supplements anymore. Mm. Let's just work on other things that perhaps you're not good at, your defence, and come back and prove him wrong. And that's exactly what I did. And I did that for some time. I did it to the point where around about 2000, end of 2002, 2003, I was playing my best rugby, and he almost couldn't, he couldn't ignore me anymore.
Yeah.
So eventually took me to the tour on as a third choice scrum half, which was a bit of a cop-out probably, but for me, I didn't care. I was waiting for my opportunity, really. Yeah. And I went to that World Cup 2003. I didn't play against Tonga. I think it was Canada and Italy in the group stages. And I thought, oh, come on, just, you know, give me a break. You know, I could have done something against those three teams. Yeah. And now we've got the All Blacks. You're never going to pick me against the All Blacks. And he just came up to me in the week, said, look, do you want to have an opportunity? Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, with bells on, you know. I remember before the week before the game, I was really ill as well, which was, I was thinking, God, don't do this to me.
Yeah.
Typical, don't do this to me. But eventually, 2 days before the game, I felt okay. Managed to get through a team run, and I was just ready to go. I remember sitting in the change rooms, and I was talking to myself, saying, Shane, if you don't play well today, kiss the Welsh, you know, your Welsh place goodbye, because it's not, this is last chance saloon.
Yeah. Hansen could almost justify his not picking
you. Yeah, exactly.
If you stink the joint out
you know,
that day.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it the potential to happen, really, if I blew it, and I suppose if I didn't take the pressure, if I couldn't handle the pressure. But I just remember going out there thinking, oh my God, I feel great. You know, all right, playing the All Blacks, you had like Spencer and Dougie Howlett and these guys. But I thought, oh, so, who cares? And Wales just went out with this intent to just match New Zealand at their own game, which suited me perfectly.
Yeah.
And I just remember, bouncing at first receiver, second receiver, scrum half on the wing.
Yeah.
And everything I touched just turned to gold. And I just remember thinking, God, you know, thank you very much for giving me this. And we went out, not only myself, I played particularly well, but the Welsh team just, you know, everyone just was like, where the hell does this Welsh team come from?
Yeah.
You know, we're scoring 30-odd points, nearly 40 points against the All Blacks. Okay, they scored 50-odd, but, you know, what a game. And you know, it turned out to be one of the best World Cup games ever. And I ended up scoring and setting up a few. And
you were brilliant, yeah.
I just remember thinking, God, thank you very much, you know. I'm gonna start praying to God every night.
That's the defining moment. I can imagine that night after a lifetime being told you're too small, Hansen comes along, you're out in the cold for 2 years, this could be the end, you're the third scrum half, and then, yes,
it was complete euphoria, it was. I've never come off a field thinking, you know, what happened there? It was almost over too quickly. I could have done with another 20 minutes, you know, it was just one of those moments. But, it was the defining moment in my career where pretty much I didn't get dropped after that.
Did Hansen come up to you afterwards and say, not bad?
He's a stubborn man, is Steve, and I think he probably went down the lines of, well done, I knew what I was doing,
kind of thing.
Yeah. But
masterstroke.
Yeah, the masterstroke. But look, did I care? I did not care.
Because you'd had a row in training a few weeks before that when you were meant to be imitating Tongan.
Yeah, I said something under my breath from about 120 yards away, and he heard me. It wasn't the nicest of words, and at the time, I thought it was justified, but probably not. Mm. And he came up to me afterwards, after training, and said, like, Shane, you're in the fitness at the end here. And he said, right, on your stomach, I want you to do some shuttles. Mm. And pretty much said, you can call me a fat bastard after you've done the fitness session. So, I thought then, right, okay, I think my Welsh chances have pretty much gone again.
So two Grand Slams follow. In 08, when you win World Player of the Year, you're just sensational. In that Six Nations, you score two tries against Scotland, two tries against Italy, try against Ireland, try against France. You're breaking records. You're the World Player of the Year. An amazing stretch. The Lions pops up in the midst of all that as well. You go in 05, you go in 09. Can I ask you about Paul O'Connell as a captain in 09?
Yeah.
I've heard several Welsh players talk about their respect for him and what they learned about him as a player. I mean, you can talk about O'Driscoll as well in 05. Obviously, the injury earlier on affected his tour. But O'Connell in 09, what was that like?
Yeah, both great captains, I think. I spent a lot of time with Paulie and on the Lions tour in 09. We were straight away, when we were in London, we were roommates. And I got to know him quite quickly.
What's he like as a roommate? Dish the dirt here.
Makes a cracking cup of coffee, in fairness. And And you know, he's good as gold. He's really humble yeah. man, nice guy. You know, you wouldn't mess with him on the rugby field. That's for sure. I'm sure he's got a temper, especially with that ginger hair. Well, the ginger hair he used to have anyway. But a real good leader. I think what I liked about Paul is he knows when to have the crack and he knows when to switch on, and he's a funny guy off the field. But on the field and leading into games, he's a true captain. You know, he leads from the front. He's no-nonsense kind of captain that you completely respected. He's this massive physical presence that, you know, if you were going into a big fight, you'd push him in the front as well and wait for him to do the business and then chuck a couple of sly ones on the side. Well, I would anyway, yeah, that's for sure.
A few kicks.
So he's that kind of captain, and I admired him for that. But he's just got this aura, and in 2009 he had this huge aura of, you know, you'd follow this guy anywhere, really.
Because I've seen Living With Lions documentary, and I presume at this stage in your life you've heard a lot of speeches.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of rah-rah-rah speeches.
Yes.
His seemed particularly good, I must say. Now, I haven't been in as many dressing rooms as you, but it felt like he owned the room and everybody was with him.
Yeah. And Paul's probably not a big chatter. You know, he's not a big speaker. He's not one of these, I suppose, that rehearses for weeks and weeks, some of these big speeches.
Yeah.
He does what he does and he leads from the front, and that's, you know, what I liked about Paul. So that, yeah, the speech on the Lions was quite spine tingling, because you probably don't associate that with Paul. You know, he's someone that he's got the presence, he's no nonsense, he's got utmost respect for the referees and everything, but just gets on with his job. So when a player like that gets up and speaks, and you can see the emotion in his eyes and the anger and all these emotions floating around, it kind of, you know, it really hits home. And I'd never been captained by Paulie before, so I had never experienced that. So yeah, it was quite inspirational, really. And then he goes out and then kicks a shit and whatever runs in front of him, really. So that's the kind of captain you want.
Yeah. Obviously, it was difficult for O'Driscoll with the injury, and, you know, you're instantly sidelined. Any Irish players we talked to didn't particularly enjoy 05 and the single rooms and just, you know, the size of the squad and two different teams, and they loved 09. Was that your sense?
Oh, yeah, completely.
Right.
I think, you know, the Lions tour for me 2005 was my first. Wet behind the ears, and I didn't really know what was going to happen then. I found it tough.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy having a roomie. One, he can look after me. You know, if I'm late for a meeting, you know, he's there, look, we got to go late for a meeting. And you'd find that when you're in a room by yourself and it's all quiet, you're thinking, God, am I missing something?
Yeah.
You know, and that was tough. And
you're isolated, I
yeah,
guess.
It yeah, is, you are isolated. Yeah. And it is very difficult, you know. And, yeah, on the tour, you know, separating the squads and having, you know, 10 chefs and Alistair Campbell and these guys around.
Yeah.
It just felt like a military operation rather than a rugby
fun.
Tour.
Yeah.
2009 was an old school rugby tour. No, I'm not saying we were on the piss every night, but
it was the McGeeken values.
Yeah, the McGeeken and Warren Gatland enjoys the social side of it as well. He enjoys getting the guys together for a meal. Yeah, have a pint, have two pints, but you've got training at 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
We're going to be beating the lumps out of each other, and I want you there, you know, fully focused and ready to go.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, face the consequences. Yeah. And everyone respects that. So 2009 was a great tour. Mm. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the way in which we played showed that, really. All right, we were unlucky. We should have won the series, I believe. But I came away from there thinking, I don't know, I really enjoyed that tour. Even though there's so much at stake and it's huge rugby games being played.
Yeah.
We had the best laugh off and, you know, and on the training field, I suppose, as well. And
what Irish guys did you go on with best?
Well, Paulie, first and foremost.
Your coffee,
you know, my roomie, my bitch, my coffee bitch. Don't tell him I said that.
We won't.
He was great. Played golf with him as well. Spent a lot of time with Brian. A lot of time for Brian as well. And, you know, spent a lot of time with him as well. Like Tommy Bowe. Played with the Ospreys as well. These guys, they were all good. They were all good crack, as you say. And, you know, we had a couple of good drinks with those guys.
Yeah.
Good training sessions. And really on Keith Earls as well. Top man.
Right.
I called him Robbie Earls the other day on a TV program. Didn't even notice, but obviously two very different people. He's a good guy as well, and spent a lot of time with Keith, top man. No, look, there wasn't anyone I didn't get on with.
Right.
I'm being completely honest, but you've got to have time together away from the rugby fields. And I think that's why 2005 was probably difficult. You know, whenever we got together, it was a function. So we were all in our suits and ties, and it just seemed a little bit too formal at times. Where 2009, I'd go up for a beer on a Tuesday with a couple of lads and a bit of food. And it just felt old school, and it just felt right. And like I say, the only thing that I was disappointed with is that we didn't win the series.
Yeah. Last question then. Friday week in the Millennium Stadium. We're confused. We don't know what's going on with Welsh rugby.
join the queue.
Well, you did say of the last performance, Wales really didn't seem to know what they were doing or what direction they wanted to play. It wasn't quite all there. So you're obviously a bit concerned. Like, we're expecting a backlash because the players are going to get it from the press for the next 2 weeks. So it's going to be an intense opening 20 minutes. But what is going on with Welsh rugby? Like, is this side now in need of major work?
Well, I'm hoping there's a backlash to begin with. Yeah. It's quite confusing, really, because do I think Wales can play? They can play better if they play like they did against England, against Ireland at home. You know, they can win the game. However, I've been very impressed with Ireland. I think they've, you know, apart from the blip in the first half against Scotland, I think they've improved as each game's gone on. They've got some great players in that team. They've got a strong pack. You know, the front row, like some McGrath and Furlong, are really, you know, really showing the way, and Bestie in the middle there. The back rower, you know, up there with the best in the world, so physical and really trying to beat teams up and beat players up and get over that gain line. And when you've got Sexton, who's decided to come back from an injury and start playing like he has, with the likes of Murray, who's hit form, you know, it is tough. But you look at the players Wales have, you know, they should be competing against these boys. So I want to be optimistic. I want to think that Wales won't play like they did second half against Scotland. And I do know they are good enough to beat Ireland. However, I think Ireland are the team to beat at the moment. I tipped Ireland at the start of the Six Nations. I'm not going to change my mind because I think they are still good enough to beat England at Dublin. But I think it's going to make for an interesting couple of weeks. And I hope, look, my heart's telling me Wales, but my head's telling me Ireland at the moment.
Good answer. listen, a pleasure to have you in and to meet you. We'll be watching how you get on with Glenn Swilly on Wednesday night, 9:30 on RTE. And Shane Williams, bigger than people might expect. A pleasure to meet you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, buddy. Thank you.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.